prayers on our behalf. We are ever aware of our need of the prayers of the saints back here. So we do appreciate your prayers and your support for us. So this was us before we left when we were here almost 3 years ago. Everybody was very little and tiny, and everybody's still very little and tiny, but this is us now. Everybody's grown up or growing up. Maeve is now three, she'll be four, and really all she knows is Ireland. I mean, that's the kind of the world. This is her first real understanding of America being here now. So this is what Americans think of when they think of Ireland. It's beautiful, it's green, you've got these beautiful castles everywhere. It's just this magical place. The reality is, though, this is Ireland. This is Ireland about 310 days out of the year. It is a rainy, gloomy, dark, windy place almost all year long. There have been times where we've gone two and a half months without even seeing the sun. It is just a dark and gloomy place. And you can see in that bottom corner there, it was just a windy, windy day that day. But this is it. It's just rainy and dark all the time, even during the summer. Since we've been here, they have had a heat wave. It was up to 73 in Ireland for about 3 days, and that was a heat wave. But pretty much it's been about low 60s and rainy since we've been here. We got here June 23rd. So just a little bit about our life. Just to kind of get you oriented where we are, Ireland is this little island off the west coast of the UK, and that little white line that you see there, that's the dividing line between the North and the Republic, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a little later here. This is just to kind of let you see, zoomed in on Ireland, where it is. So Dublin on the east coast here, if you were to drive about an hour north, you get to this little peninsula right there. That's called the Cooley Peninsula, and that's where we live. We live on this little peninsula about 15 minutes south of the Northern Irish border. There's a zoomed-in view. So the little red flag, that's where we live. We live in a village called Rockmarshall, which has about 250 people in it. And then the main village is Carlingford. You can see I have an arrow there to it on the kind of the northeast side. Carlingford is the main village, and that has about 1,200 people in it. And so this peninsula is just dotted with all these tiny little villages everywhere you go. And I think on the whole, there's about 20,000 to 20,000 people on this peninsula. And apart from us, there's nobody doing any work out on this peninsula. Ashley and I are the only ones who are doing any type of evangelistic work out there. And actually, there's only three other Christians that I can think of on the whole peninsula. So out of 20, 25,000, you know, there's three Christians. And there's nobody doing any work. We are the only ones out there. And then this Dundalk here, you can see right there, that's kind of the big town. That's about 34,000 people. That's about a 20-minute drive from where we are, but that's the main, I guess, the big town in the area. So here's just a few pictures of Carlingford. You can see it's a very beautiful old village. You've got the Carlingford Bay that comes in there. You've got these mountains that are behind it. The village itself is very old. There's that castle right here. That's Prince John or King John's castle. If you remember from the Robin Hood stories, he had that built, and he actually only stayed there for 3 days, but it's named after him. But you can see it's a very old, rustic-looking place, and because of that, it draws a lot of people from Eastern Europe who follow the occult, and so there are about 17 witches who live in Carlingford. So when I first went to Ireland, the guy who was taking me around, every old castle, every old building, he would always point out and say, "You see that castle? That's older than your country, right?" I mean, it's just everything is so old there. So this is the original town gate to Carlingford. It was established in 1326. And so this is just a quick little video to see what it looks like as you're coming through the old town gate into Carlingford. You'll see on either side, there's just different restaurants and different stores. Just to kind of give you an idea of what it looks like. I mean, this used to be one of the main roads, but now they've blocked it off, so it's just for walking. You'll see on the I guess your right, after this little candy store here, that cafe sign. That's Liberty Cafe. We go there quite a bit. Ashley's meeting women from Carlingford there, just trying to meet with people and talk with them. The owner of the Liberty Cafe, his name is Stephen. He actually has lung cancer. Do you know that? He has lung cancer. But he doesn't want to talk about God. He doesn't want to do anything. But so that's kind of a little bit what it looks like just walking down that main road there. This is our, I don't know if you guys remember, but we were having huge car troubles. It was just insane. Our old car was just falling apart at the seams. And by God's grace, we were able to get a new one. And so this is our new car. But I don't want to show you the car necessarily, but I want to show you the roads. Because this road right here, that's a two-lane road. And so you'll be driving, same thing here up here. You know, that's a bridge. You can see the water on it. That's a two-lane bridge. And so you'll be driving down the road, and inevitably another car is coming, and so you have to find a ditch to pull off of. Otherwise, you know, you're basically playing chicken until see who's going to swerve first. And so the roads are very narrow. I remember one time I was taking a corner coming up kind of into the mountain, and I drove for maybe 150 yards or so, and then all of a sudden this giant garbage truck comes coming down the road, and there is nowhere to get off. And so I had to back up this road, what seemed like forever, and back up onto the main road to let this garbage truck out because there was nowhere to turn. So all these little roads, these are all two-lane roads, and you just got to pull off somewhere. This you see a lot. You'll be driving down the road, and there will be sheep or cows in the road, and you've just got to be careful not to hit them. If you kill a sheep, it's about €1,000 a sheep, and so you know you've got to reimburse the farmer. So you just kind of, you know, you go slow, and you just kind of hope they move out the way, but you'll see that a lot as well, just sheep walking around, cows walking around. So this is what they call central heating. Are basically radiators. So this is how our house is heated, and it runs off of kerosene. So we have to fill this giant tank with kerosene, and then it heats the water, it heats the radiators, and that's how our homes are heated. But the houses aren't built with insulation. So our wall is basically sheer, it's just stone that's been plastered over. And, you know, so as we're trying to hang pictures, I'm trying to drill, I've got this massive hammer drill. And inevitably, I mean, it's just stones everywhere. So you're drilling straight, and inevitably you hit a pebble, and the drill just goes, boom, and like flips up, and now you've got a divot in your wall, and it's really frustrating trying to hang anything. So it doesn't keep in the warmth. It's just a cold, cold house, and so you have these radiators. Well, we got there November of 2014. It was cold, it was damp, it was rainy. We filled this up. It costs about between $1,200 and $1,300 to get that thing filled up. And we're still thinking like Americans. And we're thinking, it's cold, let's heat our house. And this is supposed to last about 8-9 months. Well, we went through that kerosene in about 2.5 months and realized that we can't live like that anymore because we don't have $1,300 every couple months to be heating our home. So what we do is there's a timer. And so we heat our house basically 1 hour in the morning and 1 hour in the evening every day. So about 2 hours during the winter. Just so the house isn't super freezing cold, but enough that the kerosene will last as well, because otherwise you run out of kerosene. And if you do run out of kerosene, how you have to heat your water, because the kerosene heats the water as well, you have to get out your kettle, you heat the kettle up, you dump the kettle in the sink, and you can wash the dishes with hot water that way, or you dump it in the bath and heat the bath water that way. Because kerosene is just really expensive. So we've learned that in the winter, you know, you just wear lots of clothing. You wear your coats, and you just try to stay warm, and you heat your house just a couple hours a day because it just goes really quickly. It's very expensive to keep putting in kerosene. This is how we do laundry. Our washing machine is extremely small, and it costs a lot of money. So to do about two loads, like wash and dry two loads, is about $15. And so Ashley will, you know, we'll get a very little load into the washer. After that's gone through, you have to go out and you hang it up on the clothesline. And so you can see Ashley there trying to hang it up in that bottom corner there. And it's usually windy, and so she's trying to hang it up while it's windy. But also, we have nettles in our yard. I don't know if you've ever stepped on nettles, but they hurt. They sting. And so, you know, she's trying to dodge nettles, hanging up the clothes. And then sometimes you've got sheep and cows that are wandering into our backyard, and you know, that you're trying to dodge what they've left behind. And so it's a big ordeal. The problem is, though, is that you can't really tell, but in this top picture, top right picture there, it's actually raining that day. And so you hang out your clothes, and you're hoping there'll be enough sun, enough heat to get it dry, but inevitably it rains, and so if you don't get it in before the rain comes, they're soaked again. So I think this day, the rain came unexpectedly, and then it rained for the next 4 days. And so our clothes got 4 days worth of washings, and then Ashley had to take it all in and start all over because it was just that kind of a musty smell to it. So that's how you have to do it. You get good at reading the sky. We can kind of look over the Dundalk Bay. We can look at Dundalk, and we can see what the clouds are doing. And if there's a break, it's like immediately get some laundry done, get it out on the clothesline, because this is the only time we're going to have to dry our clothes. And when you see clouds starting to form, you run out there, you get all the clothes, you bring it in so they don't get soaked. But this is how you have to do it, and it takes a long time. It takes a long time. We do live right in front of a farm, so there's a fence that runs along the back, and behind it are sheep and cows, and inevitably, I don't know how, but these sheep and cows somehow jump the fence, and we wake up in the morning, and we'll have bulls in the back of our yard, or sheep there, and they're always coming, and you know, the sheep will come and eat our flowers, and this was the time that a cow got into our backyard, so Ashley was trying to go back and touch it and see if she could get close to it. And it was kind of, you know, it's kind of interesting at first, but after the first month or so of animals being in the backyard, and then you realize you got to clean up after them, and these massive cows and sheep there, you end up just saying, all right, you got to call the farmer. His name is Seamus. You say, Seamus, your sheep have escaped again. Can you come get them and, you know, get them back? They're eating the flowers. But this happens all the time. We've got cows and sheep just straying and running around our backyard. Yeah, there was a hole, wasn't there? That's right. And this is, I put this on just as a traditional full Irish breakfast. If you go to any pub or any restaurant and order a full Irish, this is what you would usually get. So you got toast and bacon and sausage. You got baked beans. Usually they have mushrooms, you know, eggs, tomatoes. And then we usually, when people come, we don't tell them what all is in it because we want them to try things. And they have, this is black pudding and white pudding, and so white pudding is pretty much just oats and like pig fat, and the black pudding is oats and pig fat and pig blood mixed together. And so when people come to visit, we say, here, try this, you know, this is a traditional full Irish breakfast, see what you think of it, and then we tell them what it is, and let them experience it, otherwise they won't try it. So you guys have heard, I'm sure, of the luck of the Irish. Well, what I want to tell you really quick is a little bit about the bad luck of the Irish. The Irish are extremely superstitious. And where we are, these superstitions are not just, well, these are some fun things that they believe. Well, not even that they, that's just things to say, like don't walk under a ladder, but you know, nobody really actually believes it. But these are things they actually hold dear. These are things that affect how they live. So these are just a few of the superstitions. So it is bad luck to start a journey on a Saturday. It is bad luck to move house on a Saturday, but good luck to move in on a Friday. It's bad luck to leave the hospital on a Saturday. One of our friends that we've been building a friendship with, Ashley's reached out to. She was pregnant. She went into the hospital to have her child, and just worked out that she was supposed to leave the hospital on a Saturday. And so she was in conversation with Ashley about whether or not she should actually leave on a Saturday, because it's bad luck to leave a hospital on a Saturday. And Ashley told her, well, you know, your insurance isn't going to pay for you to stay another day. And she said, well, of course it is. They will. This is Ireland. Everybody knows you don't leave the hospital on a Saturday. And so she actually did end up leaving on a Saturday. And prior to her going to the hospital, her daughter wasn't feeling too well. Well, she leaves the hospital on a Saturday, her daughter gets sick, and she thinks that it's because she left on the Saturday that her daughter got sick. It's bad luck to put new shoes on the table. So Ashley was out with her friend. She bought some new shoes. They came back to our house. She put the box of new shoes on the table, and she basically pushed Ashley out of the way and knocked the shoes off the table, because it's bad luck to have new shoes on the table. It's bad luck to put the Christmas tree up before December 6th or take it down before January 6th. It's bad luck to cut down a fairy tree. A fairy tree is if you're driving down the Irish countryside or just down the roads and you see a single tree that's not close to any other trees. It's just kind of by itself. You'll see around it that the ground is unkept. It's just kind of let to grow wild. That, they believe, is a fairy tree. And if you do anything to this fairy tree, bad luck will come to you. And so it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in that even if it's 10 years down the line and something bad happens, everybody will say, well, you see, it's because you cut down the fairy tree. So you just have these little fairy trees dotting the landscape everywhere. If a person comes into a house by one door, they must leave by the same door. This is an interesting one. If you see a comb on the ground that doesn't belong to you, do not pick it up, or the banshee will come and steal your soul. If a bird flies into your house, it's a sign that someone close to you will die. If you see a single magpie, you must nod at it to say hello, or you'll have bad luck. So this is also an interesting one. A red-haired person must not be the first person to enter your house on the new year, or you will have bad luck. And then everyone who does enter your house on the new year must bring a piece of coal into the house for good luck. So, you know, these are things that we read and we think, man, these are just crazy. But these are things they actually hold dear, that they actually believe that, yeah, if you put new shoes on the table, bad luck will come to you. So I always find it interesting that as, you know, as we're trying to talk to people, even though if they don't want to talk about God or religion, they're very spiritual. Through these things we can see, they actually believe in a supernatural world where there is an external force to themselves watching them and able to impact their lives because if they put new shoes on the table, this outside force is able to bring them bad luck. So they are very, very spiritual. So just a little bit about our ministries. Every Monday night, I'm involved in a radio program called Heart of the Matter. It's an evangelistic radio program. This is Kevin Marley sitting here. He's one of the members of Dundalk Baptist Church, where we attend. And this is the day I brought my two older kids and let them announce the songs on the radio. But it's an evangelistic radio program. We're trying to get the gospel out there. Over the past 2 months, past 2 months since we were there last in May, I've been going through Galatians. And that's kind of been our study that we've been doing. But what's interesting is though it's local community radio, it's online as well. And so we've had people from all over the world tune in. We have people from China and Saudi Arabia and Eastern Europe and Africa tuning into this program. How they found it, I have no idea. I don't know how they find this tiny little show, but we've had people from Eastern Europe type in questions. We can't take calls, but they can send in questions on the Facebook page. And so a couple of months ago, we had somebody from Eastern Europe type in a question about Galatians 3, and so we were able to answer that. So it's been really neat to see how broad of a reach this little show has. So we do that every Monday night. Every last Sunday of the month, we do what I have called Dinner in the Bible. It's not the most creative name, but there you go. It tells you what it is. Basically, the idea behind it was what we're going to do is we're going to have a meal. We'll invite people and say, look, come have dinner with us. We're going to have a Bible study afterwards. If you want to stay, great. If not, if you want to go home, that's fine. Just come eat. If you want to just eat and then hang out a little bit while we go have a Bible study, that's fine. You can do that too. Just to get people into our house, see that, you know, we're not crazies or anything. And so we were told when we first got there by a lot of the Irish that, oh, you probably couldn't do anything like this for 6 or 7 years once you kind of build and establish relationships. So we thought, you know, we'll give it a try. We were there a year and a half, and we did it, and we had several people come. So this was in April of 2016, and by God's grace, we've had people come every single month since April of 2016 when we very first started it. So I've had lots of people ask me, how did you do that? That is really, really fast by Irish standards. That we were only there for less than 2 years, and we actually had a Bible study in our home. That has blown a lot of the Irish away because that's just unheard of. So, we have anywhere from 2 to 10 people at a given time, so it's not the same, but we have had one couple come almost every single time to this study. And you know, this is a very basic Bible study. The very first time we did it, I have little handouts that I give people with Bible verses on it, and I had to explain, all right, if I say John 1:1, that means John is the book that you go to, the Gospel of John. The first number is the chapter, and the second number is the verse, and that's how you would look something up. And one of the ladies who was there said, you know, I always wondered what that meant when people said that. I said, they don't even have an understanding of biblical references. It's extremely illiterate, a biblically illiterate community. And so I've kind of created my own curriculum. I call it Glimpses. And basically, we take 15 to 20 minutes and almost like a systematic theology. We take the first one was Glimpses of God. Who is God? Glimpses of man. Who are we? Glimpses of Jesus. We actually spent 3 weeks on that. And then glimpses of the Holy Spirit and the Trinity and the church. And so we just take 15 to 20 minute little glimpses of all these areas, just to help them begin to have a foundation, because you can't walk up and just start talking about Jesus and God because they know absolutely nothing. So it's very, it's just a very simple level just to try to give them some type of foundation to have a further talks and we can go deeper on it. I'm also part of a group called Calm Down and Plant a Church, which is a kind of an organization, an association between churches along the northern border and the southern border. So Calm Down stands for, these are either towns or counties. So C is Cavan, and then Armagh, Louth, which is the county I live in, Monaghan, and then County Down, which is the county right across the border from where we are in the north. And so basically it's how we want to show that we can work together, that there doesn't have to be this friction and animosity between the north and the republic, because it's still there. Even though the IRA has put down their weapons in about 2004, there's still that friction and animosity. So I had a friend of mine, Kevin, who you saw in the radio slide. He was asked to come preach up in Belfast, and so he went up there, and one of the guys at the church said, why don't you come park your car at my house, because if anybody sees you have a Republic license plate, they'll pretty much smash your windows. Or one of Ashley's friends was with another of her friends, and they were walking in Belfast, and they told her, as they're turning around this corner, they told her, just don't talk, because if anybody hears you have a southern accent, something bad could happen, so just don't talk while we go down this road. So it's still there. It's not as much, but it is still there. And so, you know, one of the things we want to do with this is we want to show that you can work together, and that the North, which has been traditionally Protestant, can look at the South and say, okay, there's gospel work going on there too. One of the pastors in this group, it wasn't the pastor himself, but one of his members who told him. He said, you know, I'm not sure that the people in the South can even be Christians, just because the attitude is just, they look at the Republic and think, well, if they say they're Christians, they're actually just lying. Maybe they're just trying to get to us. So I don't know that they can actually be converted. And so there's this attitude of just kind of hostility between the North and the Republic. And so, you know, this is an important group just to try to bridge that, to say we can work together. We've got churches in the North, we've got churches in the Republic right along the border, which has been historically volatile, and say, you know, just say we can work together for the cause of Christ. I also do, as part of Dundalk Baptist Church, I've set up a course structure in conjunction with the Irish Baptist College to offer further education courses. So the first one that was offered was a New Testament introduction class that I taught, and then I have gotten professors from the Irish Baptist College to come teach other courses. So we've done one on Christology, the doctrine of God. We've had one on introduction to Islam. Just to give people more instruction, more learning for a fairly cheap cost. And it's open up to anybody who wants to come. And so, you know, we usually on average have about 6 to 7 people come to these. Other ministries that I'm involved in, every Monday morning I have a Bible study in Carlingford, which is about 13 minutes from where we live. Every 3 weeks I lead a men's meeting. I teach the teen Sunday school. I preach at Dundalk Baptist Church. And then I do counseling as well. Ashley is involved in a lot as well. She does a lot of counseling. with the women that she meets with. She meets with three different groups of women, some from Carlingford, some from our area. You saw that we were kind of on the southwest side of that peninsula. And then our two girls are in a dance school. They're in a ballet class, and so Ashley's been able to get involved with the moms there. She's also the secretary for the PTA. She gives rides to a lot of people. A lot of people in Ireland don't have a driver's license because it costs about $800-$900 to get a driver's license. And so we've had, like, one of our friends, his lung collapsed, and he was driven in ambulance down to the hospital. But his wife had she would have to have taken a bus to get down there to see him. It would have taken a while, so Ashley took her to see him. She makes lots of meals for different people. When people come visit, you know, we're hosting them, and she's making all the meals for our last Sunday dinner in the Bible as well. This past summer, we were a part of the ACBC training that went on in Dundalk, a biblical counseling training. And this is just so extremely important. We realized, particularly for Ashley, to have more training in this. I mean, you don't think about it, but the kind of issues that come up are maybe a lot of issues that we would think of, maybe even here. I mean, a lot of alcohol and things like that, but also very supernatural things of going to fortune tellers or talking to spirits and things like that. So we've been thinking about Ashley doing further study and training and getting maybe a degree in biblical counseling, just so that she has more of a foundation and more resources to draw from in helping these individuals. We do two outreaches every year. The first one is an Easter outreach. We did one in 2015, and it worked really well. We had about maybe five families come, a few unbelievers come, and so we thought that worked well. Let's do it again. And so in 2016, we had another one. We did some games for the kids that you can see up there, and we wanted to get Bibles into people's hands. And so we had these little Easter baskets, and we put Bibles in them, ESVs, and we gave away, I think, about 25 ESVs and about 35 Jesus Storybook Bibles. And for a lot of the adults, it was the first time they'd ever even held a Bible in their hands. You can't buy a Bible in the Republic. It's very hard. And so this was the first time that they had even held a Bible in their hands. Well, that went really well. So we did it again this past year, and we had even more people come, which was great. We had about 50 kids show up and about 27 adults who stayed. And so you can see in that bottom corner as well, you know, Ashley was in there talking with some of the moms, and no Easter outreach event is complete without a giant Star Wars blow-up slide. So we had one of those. And so it was really good. Every year it's continued to grow and grow and grow. And so this has been a good outreach. We hid over 500 Easter eggs. And this one has worked really well. We've done an autumn outreach as well, or a fall outreach. You guys have helped out with the last one. We really appreciate that very much. The first one we did, we had hay rides. We thought we were going to do an American theme. It'll be really good. They'll like it. It's American. So we had hay rides. The kids loved it. They thought that was fun. We thought we're going to have s'mores. You know, this will be great. So we got a little fire thing. We had s'mores. And all the Irish kids hated the s'mores. Hated them. And so we ended up with gooey marshmallow in our grass and in our carpets. And it was just a total bomb. And so then we had candied apples. And they hated the candy apples. And they're throwing them in the fire pits to see if they'll burn. And so we had these melted apples in the grass, and just it was horrible. And so the next year we had less people come. And so you know, we probably won't do another fall outreach this year. We'll think of something else to do, but that one just kind of didn't work as well as we had hoped. But, you know, it's not about whether the event itself works, but it's about bringing people into your home. Let them see, let them have a good time. Let them get to know you, build relationships. So we'll probably end up doing something else, though. How you cannot like s'mores, I don't know. We're also involved in a Coaching for Christ, which is a free soccer camp. This is with Dundalk Baptist Church. And basically, it's a four-day event that's free for all the kids in the community. We had about 110 last summer. And at the midpoint each day, You can see in the top corner there. We stop, get together, and then somebody gives just a little talk on the gospel or some aspect of the Bible, and then you break up into your teams, and the coach kind of asks, you know, further questions, tries to interact more on a personal level with the kids. And then on that Thursday, we have a huge banquet at the church where Stephen Murphy, who's the pastor of Dundalk Baptist Church, gives a 20-minute little gospel presentation, and there's free food, and we hand out awards. And that has worked really well. It's one of the bigger events that we do. So we didn't do it this year. Hopefully we can do it again next year. Very quickly, just some of the difficulties that we face. So Northern Ireland, when you cross the border, you're technically going into a different country. It's part of the UK. And so traditionally, the North has been Protestant and the South Republic. Now, when we hear that, we think of those terms in terms of religion. But for them, it's very political. Those are political terms and identify you with your political stance, whether if you're a nationalist or whether you're remaining with being tied to the UK. And so, you know, part of the problem is we, as we present the gospel to people, as we talk to people, a lot of times in the Irish, in the Republic, in their view is that, well, if I become a Protestant, then I'm becoming British. And so, like at our dinner in the Bible, what we do is we try not to have many Christians there, but we do try to have maybe one or two Irish Christians that they can see. Here's somebody who identifies as Irish, who loves their country, and yet believes the gospel. And so they haven't abandoned their culture and their identity. And so it's just one of the barriers of living there, so close to the border in particular. There's also a rise in secularism. In 2015, Ireland became, I believe, the first country in the world to legalize gay marriage by national referendum. So the entire people, they voted. And what we found out was a lot of the people voted for it because their priest told them to vote against it. So it's not that they have this really, this deep moral conviction that this needed to be passed, but it was basically a slap in the face to the priest that you're telling me to vote against it, well, I'm going to vote for it. So that passed. In the 2016 census, those who identified as Roman Catholic dropped to 78% of the population, and the second largest group now in Ireland are those who declare no religion at all. It's up to 10%. Another difficulty is that it takes a long time to learn the nuances of Irish thought and their superstitions and how they perceive things around them. So there's an old Presbyterian church in Carlingford. And when we got there, we thought, maybe if we get something started, we could just use this old Presbyterian church. But that may or may not go well because we have to learn, okay, what do the people there historically think of that church? If it had a bad reputation, for us to go in and use it, change it up, make it a Baptist church, wouldn't matter. The historic view of it would just basically come onto us. So you got to learn how they think about the things around them. Alcohol is huge. The pub culture is dying, but the alcohol culture is still growing strong, which just means that people aren't necessarily going to the pubs only to drink, but they're going, buying alcohol, taking it home, and drinking there. So it's a huge, huge, huge problem. Everybody we know is affected by this in some way. And the occult is a huge problem where we are. So this, where they are, that's Newgrange. It's about 30 minutes from us. It's an old Neolithic tomb. But like I said, there's 17 witches in Carlingford. The occult presence is just very strong in that area. Ashley needed a dress fixed, and we were given a recommendation of a lady. We went to her house. She opens the door. She's wearing a bathrobe, just covered in tattoos, and not tattoos that you might think of, but very symbolic tattoos. And she takes us into her room where she does her work, and I'm looking at the books on her shelf, and she's got books on Wicca and casting spells and all this. So there's just a very big presence of the occult that we have to be aware of. We have to think through, how do you handle issues like this? You know, when your kids come and ask, you know, where do witches get their power? You give a much more nuanced answer than you would if that same question was given here, because you don't have 17 witches living down the road from you. You're not going to run into them on a daily basis. But there, as you're walking through Carlingford, you will. And so you have to be able to give a good biblical answer to that. The weather is also a difficulty. I think these are funny because they're true. I'm looking forward to summer. The rain gets warmer. And then this other one I think is really funny. So you're looking forward to summer? I live in Ireland. That's so true. Every time during the summer you have a day that hits 69, everybody's wondering, was that it? Did we just have summer? And so you just kind of, you live in anticipation of the hope that there will be another day of warmth. Just some of our friends, hopefully you've seen their names. You can put a face to them now. This is Colm and Lisa. We've been asking for prayer for them. They have come to almost every single one of our Dinner in the Bibles. And in that context, they have heard the gospel every month since April of 2016. Now, you know, they've heard a lot more as we're meeting with them, just hanging out. Ashley's meeting with Lisa and talking to them. But keep them in prayer. This is Joe Riley, another one of Ashley's friends. Pray for her. She was coming. She stopped coming because she says that thinking about spiritual things gives her nightmares. So we just think there's a spiritual battle going on in her heart. So just pray for her. Pray for her salvation. These are a few of other of some of the dance moms that Ashley goes out with and meets. You can see there. These are a few people from the church. So this is Stephen Murphy, the pastor, Maria Sly, Neil McCarthy, and Kevin Marley, who helps out with the radio program. Just a few others. Dundalk Baptist Church is very small. It's about 30 people, but there's I think 12, 13 nationalities represented in that small church. So just, I know you guys are praying for us. I thank you so much for that. I want to encourage you to keep praying, because as we've been thinking about it, you know, if just these people became saved, the reach of the gospel would be far greater than what we would have, because if even the people there that became saved immediately, their connections are now in Belfast and a little south in Dundalk, in a place called Castle Bellingham. Ashley has connections in Leash and some of the dance moms from Newry up in Northern Ireland. So, you know, if just a few of these people actually become saved, immediately the spread of the gospel is much further than we could ever have that kind of impact, because now they can reach out to their friends. So keep praying for them, pray for their salvation, and Lord willing, you can see how quickly a country can be set ablaze for the gospel if a few people become saved. Well, the best way to contact us is through Viber. It's a free app. You can text, you can call for free all over the world. So if you want to download that, we'd be happy to give you our number, and you can text us or call us anytime you like. There is a time difference between here and Ireland, so we may not answer if you try to call us at 3 in the morning our time, but we'll get back to you. Just a few prayer requests before we end. Our visas expire in November. We're on a 3-year visa, and it's done in November. And so we've had to put together a package, and basically a judge in Dublin is going to look at this package and decide whether or not we get to stay. It's 50-50 right now. You know, it feels like if he wakes up and has a good day, he'll say yes. If not, he'll say no. So just pray that we'll get to stay longer. It'll be another year, and then we'll have to go through the whole process again. But we don't want to leave. There's so much to do there. So pray for that our visas will be extended. Pray for the salvation of those that you know, that I've shown you, that we give to you. We pray for them they're hearing the gospel constantly, so just pray that it would impact their hearts. Pray for continued funding support. We've dropped support for various reasons, so we usually run about an $800 a month deficit, but God has been good to keep us going. And pray that we continue to be a good witness. You know, you can't, in where we live, you can't just go up to people and start talking about the gospel, because you'll be shunned and you'll be marked as somebody not to talk to. And so you've got to have a good witness in that community. So just pray for us that we'd continue to have that good witness as we do try to reach out. Well, I went a little bit over time, but are there any questions anybody has?
I've got a silly question and a serious question.
Okay.
We'll do the silly one first.
Okay.
That mom's name, was it Finuala?
Finula,
okay. Yeah. How many letters was that?
yeah, Irish names are not the easiest to figure out. That is very true, very true.
Now, my serious question. My father grew up in an Orthodox Jewish home, and one of the great struggles for him in terms of trying to witness was, for him, anything supernatural meant superstitious, illogical, irrational. Have you found, with so much superstition embedded in that culture, Michael, that you can actually bridge from, in a healthy and constructive way, from the superstition to the supernatural? Because in my situation, it seems like it was always a barrier, but in your case, have you been able to kind of use it as a bridge?
Yeah, I think it's probably easier in that sense in Ireland, because even though it is superstitious, it's a supernatural superstition that allows them to think in spiritual terms. And so one of the examples that Ashley has given is she was with her friends and the door swung open. Now, in our minds, we immediately think, you know, there's a draft, somebody's opened the door. But in their mind, their first instinct is to go shoo, 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 as shooing the spirit away. And so they're already thinking in spiritual terms. And I do think that is helpful, because it's not this hardcore, even atheistic, materialistic worldview. It's a very supernatural worldview, though it is superstitious. And I think that was, it's a little easier than for us to bridge that by then going to the Bible and kind of putting things in a proper biblical context. So I do think that's, even though they're superstitious, I think it's in our favor in that regards, that it's a very, they're already willing to think in supernatural categories. So I do think that's in our favor.
Almost like a predisposition.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anything else?
What is your long-term vision for ministry and for your ministry there in
Carlingford? Yeah, our heart is that we would be there long-term. We have to have 5 years 5 years in country within a 7-year time frame for us to get residency. And if we can get residency, then all our visa issues go away. But we want to be there long-term. We recognize that it's probably going to take, on average, it has taken about 10 to 12 years to see a church established. But that's what we want to see established. I mean, despite all the difficulties, despite the rain and the fact you never see the sun, we want to stay. We want to be there. There's just so much work. So, yeah, long term, I pray we're there, you know, 15 years from now. That's my prayer. Anything else?
Yes, in that, getting back to Art's question and your answer, in that superstitious spiritual worldview, mm-hmm. what do you find to be the greatest hard brick in the wall that you run into regarding the gospel? Are they, like, for example, are they just not willing to give up all their other spirits, or are they more inclined just not to want to deal with sin?
I don't know that the superstition is really a barrier. Would you say it's a barrier? I don't think that's the barrier. I think, he's giving you the mic.
Sorry. I would say in my coffee mornings, we haven't even gotten there yet. Like, I haven't even touched it. I got close to it, and then Lisa and I were walking at like 6 a.m. because that was the only time we could do it. And the water's right here and the mountains are up here and the giant is in the mountain and the gate creaks open. And I was like, I know what the Bible says about this, but I'll tell you about it later. I'm not doing it right now. It's a little too creepy out here. But right now, the main issue that I have to get them to see is you're a sinner and you need the Lord. And the Lord has died for all of your sins, past, present, and future.
Yeah, and I think, sorry, go ahead.
So some of this is like, I'm not even going to touch this yet, because we're not even there yet. You're not even in a place that you can think biblically through this. And so you get 2 seconds to give a little bit of truth, and it's mostly listening. And it's mostly allowing them to feel safe and comfortable with you, that you love them, that you're not judging them. I pushed Colm right before we left, and he admitted, and it was hard because I think he thought I was going to judge him, but he truly believes in fairies. He truly believes that there is something out to get him if he were to do whatever. So, you know.
Yeah, so I'm not sure it's the superstition that actually sets a barrier. I think it's the fact that they have no recognition of what is sin, and at the same time, because they do have a Catholic background, there is already in place a barrier of, I think, religious authority. And so, like in our dinner in the Bibles, I am very conscious and particular about the very words that I use. And I always, every single time, I say, I give them a sheet and I have Bible verses on them with page numbers. And I say, you don't believe a word that I say because I say it. I don't want them to replace the priest with me. I say, here's what the Bible says. We can see it here. Now you go and read it too. And I'm hoping that over time, as you know, as they're thinking about, you know, these things about spirits, or they're in mass, you know, or the twice they go a year, that when they hear the priest say something in their mind, they'll think, you know, Michael says go and read what the Bible says. Maybe I should go do that. And I'm hoping that eventually will kind of get them going. But I'm not sure that superstition puts a necessary barrier, but I think it's more of the religious background of Catholicism that is really probably one of the main hindrances.
I would agree with that, and I would say it's, they believe in God, they know God exists, but because they have been so burned by the Catholic Church, and because they have one priest saying, oh, your husband's sick? Well, tough luck, hon. You can only pray in church. And the other one says, you can pray wherever. You can even pray in the bathroom. That they're going, oh my goodness, they can't even agree. I don't know what to believe, because there is not this teaching and training to go read your Bible and find out for yourself what God has to say. Yeah. They can only take what the priest tells them. And so they're so frustrated that they just are like, well, then I'm not going to do anything. I'm just not going to go to Mass anymore. I'm not going to do anything. And just kind of throwing their hands up.
And you can see their rebellion against that in the vote in 2015, because they voted for gay marriage, many of them, just to spite the priests who told them not to. So that's why I always try to emphasize, the Bible is our authority. I'm not your authority. The priest isn't the authority. We go to God's word as our authority. Yes, ma'am.
Why is it so difficult to get Bibles over there? Why, you said it was difficult to buy Bibles. Why?
Well, it's not just difficult, it's just you can't. I mean, historically, the Catholic Church has not encouraged its people to read the Bible for themselves. The priest is the interpreter of the Bible, and what they say, they'll tell you what you need to know. And that's still the attitude, is that, well, the priest will tell me what I need to know. And so for several centuries now, it's just been ingrained into that society, is, well, you go to Mass and the priest will tell you. And so you can't, there's no Christian stores, there's no Bibles that you can buy. You have to get them elsewhere. I mean, you can go up north, there's a few places up north, but it's just, the Catholic Church has never encouraged the reading of the Bible for the lay people. And so to give Bibles to people and for them to actually take it is a huge deal. But just to give you an example of something that happened, we gave a Bible to Joe, and she set it on her coffee table. And later that day, somebody from the village in Carlingford came over and saw the Bible on the coffee table and proceeded to rip her up one side down and the other and swear at her and basically cuss her out because she had a Bible. And, you know, saying that she's now holier than thou, and who's she to think that she can read the Bible? And that's just the mentality of the place. It's just, who are you to think you can do this? You know, that's the priest's job. That's historically, that's their work, and you just listen to them because they're the authority. And so it's just, you know, it's that kind of mindset that we're trying to break into and say, here's a Bible for yourself. You know, you read it, realizing that the people around them, even their own family members, may not even like the fact that they now have a Bible.
So it's a Dark Ages type mentality?
In some regards, yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
yes,
well,
ma'am.
I think one more.
One more? Okay. Yes.
Yes, it sounds like things are relatively slow going as far as the evangelistic side.
Yeah, very slow.
Ireland. Are you noticing movement and an impact within the community that you guys are having so far?
Yeah, so I was told when we very first got there by a national Irish church planter. He's from Dublin, down in Cork, which is down south. And he told me, convey to the people who are praying for you and supporting you, that an inch movement forward is amazing. That is light years of what, especially for Americans, because we think, oh, we'll just, you know, you keep moving forward 2 years, you've got a church. And so we see inches, and that's what's encouraging. We see inches. And so the fact that after a year and a half, people will come to a Bible study is massive. Now, it may not be massive, you know, if we're here in America and we do something like that, but in Ireland, that is unheard of. And the fact that people are coming to me and saying, what are you doing that people will come to a Bible study after a year and a half? Because we want to do something like that. That's encouraging. So we see slow progress, slow movement forward. And, you know, it's just being in that small community. You know, it's 240 people. People realize who we are. They know what we're doing. Our kids are in the school there. And so they can see. That's why I pray for a good witness. They can see our lives and how it's very different from everybody else. And so, it's a very slow process. But we're encouraged. We're encouraged.
I want someone to remember that question that people are approaching our brother with in our Body Life service. And this is why I'm sending it. We want to go ahead and take our break now, and we'll come back for the worship service and that kind of thing. We've got a coffee break coming up. But we do have Body Life service this afternoon after lunch. And so I want someone to remember that question that people are coming up to Michael and saying, what are you doing that's giving you inches where people normally only get, millimeters. What are you doing? We want to ask him that question as well. And we'll have a chance, as well as other questions you may have after lunch today. So it's always a personal mission of mine to be a romanticism buster, a romanticism smasher when it comes to missions. Some of you have been to Ireland on vacation, you know it's lovely, it's beautiful, all those things Michael said that Americans think about when you think about Ireland. That's one thing. Even going on a short-term mission trip to Ireland for 2 weeks, when you know you got your plane ticket in your suitcase and you're coming home in 2 weeks, is one thing. Whether it's Ireland, Papua New Guinea, Spain, Mexico, you name the place, when you're there on the ground 24/7, 365, with those daily challenges, that's a different matter. That's what should move God's people to pray for God's people that are out there. It's a different matter altogether. And when young people come to me about missions and you see the romanticism just bleeding out of their eyes, it'll be wonderful. It'll be great. I'll go and save the world. And it'll be a foreign culture. And those things are great. But when you're eyeball deep in that day in, day out, 24/7, it is a different matter. We've got to pray for these dear people. So we'll be dismissed on that for our coffee break. We'll come back in a few minutes. Mike will lead us in our worship service. And then, we'll be dismissed.